ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் shaivam.org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் கர்மா மேனேஜ்மெண்ட் ஃபோர் அண்ட் ரிவீல்டு ஸ்கிரிப்சர்ஸ் அண்ட் ஆரிஜின் ஆஃப் கர்மா மேனேஜ்மெண்ட், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
செவன்த் பிரின்சிபல், திஸ் இஸ் மூவிங் இன் டு அ நியூ ஏரியா. மிட்டிகேட் பாஸ்ட் கார்மா. சோ ஃபர்ஸ்ட் வீர் டீலிங் வித் த்ரீ பிரின்சிபல்ஸ் ஆஃப் பீப்புள் டூயிங் திங்ஸ் டு அஸ் அண்ட் லேர்னிங் டு ஆக்ட் இன் அ வாய்ஸ் வே. Next, we're dealing with our own actions in the present, handling them, considering the consequences, creating no new negative karmas, and divinely influencing them. So we've got those three helping us with how we're acting, new actions in the present. Okay? Doing all of that, things are getting pretty sublime. Our life should be smoother than it was before. So we're not overwhelmed with karmas from the past. We're not disturbing things in the present. So what can we do next? We can mitigate the karma that we're carrying. Mitigate means make it less. We can lessen the karmic burden that we're carrying. So that's what this is talking about. So we have an analogy, again, with the judicial system. So you commit armed robbery. Okay? Saw too many movies. Whatever. Need the money for drugs. Whatever. That's the usual reason. So you commit armed robbery, and you get caught, and you get sentenced to 20 years in jail. Okay? But you're really not a bad person, you know. You're not a career criminal who's been, you know, doing this his whole life. As soon as he gets out, he's going to do it again because it's the only thing he knows how to do. You're a criminal. No, you're basically a decent person, so your behavior in jail is noticed. He's a good person, acting nicely, good behavior. So what happens when you're in jail and your behavior is noticed to be good? Get a reduced sentence, right? They don't keep you there the full 20 years. So you've done something in the past, but now you're acting in an admirable way, so you get a reduced sentence. That's the idea of mitigating karma. The normal consequence that we would face from a past action is lessened. So there's an example that Gurudeva uses. If the normal karma we would face from actions in the past is to have a leg cut off, but through various actions we're doing in the present, that karma has been mitigated, has been lessened. It'll still come, but not the full force of it. So the example Gurudeva gives is, we read about someone who has their leg cut off, or we see it on CNN, or the news. We hear about somebody else having their leg cut off, and it hits us. The whole emotion of it hits us, just like it happened to us, or like it happened to a son or a daughter, happened to someone close. You know, all of a sudden we take on the whole emotional experience of having our leg cut off. So we experienced it emotionally. It didn't happen to us physically. And then later on, say on a hiking trip, we stumble and fall and we cut our leg. Not badly, but we cut our leg. And that's the karma. It came back. But it came back mitigated. Came back lessened. Wasn't as difficult to experience. So this is an important point, right? Why experience the full brunt of a negative karma when you don't have to? This is sounding good, right? Okay, so how do we mitigate karma? We have lots of different ways. That's why it's the longest lesson in karma management. So, go through them quickly. Karma Yoga is the first one, performing good deeds, helping others in a selfless way. Doesn't have to be helping just people, you know, just helping the general community. It's one of the things Gurudeva even has the monks doing. We get involved in community service, helping on different projects here and there in the community. We put out a drug-free CD and printing aloha posters and so forth as help ways of helping the community. So just being unselfish enough to reach out beyond your immediate family, which of course is the people you're obligated to first, to help other people when you don't have to. Doing good deeds for others that you don't have to do. Doesn't make you famous, doesn't give you any benefit, just makes you feel better. That's the idea of karma yoga. So doing that lessens our karma to some extent. It's not a powerful technique, but it does help. Bhakti yoga, devotion, worship, that is intense enough to cause us to receive the grace of the gods can change the patterns of karma dating back many past lives, clearing and clarifying conditions that were created hundreds of years ago and are but seeds now waiting to manifest in the future. So that's such a beautiful sentence by Gurudeva. I wanted to read it. So the key there is intense enough. Worship that is intense enough to cause us to receive the grace of the gods. Well, here yesterday's puja was. Those of you who went to the Shiva puja, wasn't it intense? So look at that. You all got your karma mitigated. No extra charge. So that's an example. But it's two-sided. You know, there's two sides to this process. It's not just up to the priest doing the ceremony. You have to be in the right mood, right? You have to be receptive. You have to be focused. You can't be distracted. You can't be in a hurry in order for you to experience an intense moment of worship. So that's not easy necessarily, because life keeps us very busy. Children keep us distracted. Problems at work overwhelm us, so forth. You know, it's easy to be burdened, and even though we're physically worshiping, mentally and emotionally, we're not. We're somewhere else. It happens all the time, right? We're divided mind, divided emotions. We're worrying about the past, thinking about the future, concerned about others around us. We're not intensely worshiping. So it only works if you're able to intensely worship. So one of the ways of doing that is pilgrimage. And Inner Search itself is a kind of pilgrimage. So pilgrimage is taking time off from your normal duties to devote it to religious efforts such as Inner Search. So what happens there? Well, you've lessened the distractions by setting them aside, right? You've had to arrange your business so you could be away a week or two. Maybe the kids are with the grandparents and so forth. No, you've arranged your life so there's less distractions just for a period of time. So that helps be intense. You can prepare for it ahead of time. Some pilgrimages, people prepare a whole month ahead of time. Get themselves to maximize the benefits during it. They just don't do it when they arrive. They're preparing and doing things for a whole month before they even leave on the pilgrimage. So there were many pilgrimages back in the 1970s and 80s that Gurudeva took devotees on to India and varying lengths, varying experiences. And sometimes you would see this, not all the time, but particularly if you saw someone leave and then you saw them when they came back. If you didn't go, you know, if you just, like, you waved goodbye to everyone and then you welcomed them all back, you could see the difference in different people because you were comparing the before and the after without seeing the in-between, the gradual changes. So someone would look different. Not just they lost weight or something, you know. Their face would be different. You know, they'd look like a different person a little bit. They'd come back and they'd fit into life in a slightly different position, a better position. Their life would go a little more smoothly. Well, why is that? What happened? Their karma changed. They worshipped intensely enough to change their karma. they received enough blessings through the temples they worshipped at to change their karma. So we've seen it happen in many lives. It's an excellent way to mitigate karma. And it's more powerful than just karma yoga. Because karma yoga, you're just on your own, so to speak. Whereas here you're having direct blessings from God and the gods, so it's able to accomplish more. So other ways we can generate an intensity of worship is the idea of a vrata or a vow. Vratas are taken for a fixed period of time, short period of time. Like there's festivals where you take a vrata for 6 days called Skandashashti or Vinayaka Vratam. You take a vrata for 21 days. So it's just for that period of time. It's like in the... Usually you fast during the day and you go to the temple for that particular deity once during the day and then you eat at night. That's a common vrata, a vow in our tradition. Penance is another way. Prayaschitta is the Sanskrit word. So prayaschitta is instead of waiting for the karma to come back and punish you, you punish yourself now and get it over with. Why wait? They just sit around and wait. Get it over with now. So you may have seen, sometimes they show this on different educational programs up on the Himalayas, people, both Hindus and Buddhists, walking around Mount Kailas, prostrating as they walk. Instead of just walking, they're prostrating. They take one step forward, prostrate, stand up, take another step forward, prostrate, stand up, go around the whole mountain that way. What a discipline. So it's a kind of penance. Doesn't have to be around a mountain. It can be down a path or around a temple. That's a simpler way. We saw a wonderful documentary on a Hindu sadhu who did the penance of rolling a couple of thousand miles from where he lived to a temple. Just down the roads in India, you know, he wouldn't allow this in the U.S. Imagine someone rolling down the freeway with drums and everything, you know. People accompanying him. In India, it's done still. So he actually rolled about 2,000 miles. Every day they'd roll 10, 12 miles, and carry all their food pots to cook and so forth. There was about a group of 8 or 10 of them. But this one person was doing the rolling. Others would walk in front and behind so the buses would miss him and so forth. It's a real documentary we have. Yeah. And we could give someone a copy of it if they wanted it. Just let us know. So that was a real penance. You know, definitely changed the person's karma, I'm sure, quite dramatically. But you don't have to do something that extensive. But it gives a sense of it. There's another type of penance which is directly related to the misti. The example we use is a teacher who used to engage in corporal punishment of students as a change of heart. Says, you know, this isn't right. I shouldn't be doing this. In fact, I should never have done this. I really feel bad about having disciplined children in this way. What can I do? So the penance is to educate other teachers in alternative ways, like publishing pamphlets on it and giving talks on it and so forth. You know, making amends by trying to change how others who are doing this are still trying to convince them not to do it. So it's like in the drug world, if someone uses drugs, gets caught, goes to prison, comes out, and then tries to convince others not to use drugs. You know, if you've probably heard of programs like that, seen people doing that. Well, that's a form of penance. Definitely. They're compensating. They're eliminating the karma of having done that by trying to help others avoid that action themselves. So it's a penance that's directed toward the specific wrong action. So Gurudeva's comment on mitigate is, when pre-dawn morning pujas, scriptural reading, devotionals to the guru, and meditation are performed, without fail, the deeper side of ourselves is cultivated, and that in itself softens our karma and prolongs life. So, softens our karmas. Just to comment on that as the last point. It's important to realize we're not saying do a few things and all your karmas, negative karmas, go away. You know, you want to have karma management series, fourth and final session. I have a story. This is an email that came in. I'm going to read part of it. Came in a few months ago in response to our request we put out on Taka. We were developing a series called 9 Principles for Raising Children. You may have recalled reading that in Hinduism Today. So we were soliciting input. So this is some of the input we got from one mother. My daughter, Nita, was trained to be a peer mediator in the 5th grade. Pretty impressive, right? Of a 10-year-old peer mediator. She learned to guide the students who were having conflicts through certain steps using I messages to come to a resolution. An important component was that the two students had to want to resolve their differences. Many times people want to hold on to their anger or their hurt and blame others for it. I was thrilled to have this kind of training available to people at such a young age. So that fits right in to our karma management principles here without making direct reference to it, but that process, if it's successful, involves the first 3 principles, right? You have to forego retaliation, so one student can't be retaliating against the other. We have to accept responsibility, as it says here, you can't be blaming others. And we have to forgive the offender, which is the point of the mediation, forgiving the offender. So it brings together all 3 of the first principles quite nicely. Excuse me. Goes on to another subject here. I truly believe we live out part of our karma through our children, and we grow and improve as they do. How many of you believe that? You ever thought about it? The funny thing is that we can see ourselves in our children, yet we want them to be so much better. Anyone ever felt that way? Somehow they're supposed to handle the problems that we face better than we did. We want them to be perfect and to overcome our imperfections. So, how does that tie in? Well, it ties in the sense that we work out our own karma sometimes through helping other people work out the same karma we worked on. So in this case, it's talking about children. So quite often, the challenges we faced in life and worked out either fully or partly, we face them again in our children, amazingly. And we need to figure out how to advise our children to handle the same karmas that we had to handle. So if we manage to do that successfully, what do we know? We know that karma is fully resolved. It's gone away. Because if we can help someone else through the same karma successfully, we've clearly mastered it. We've clearly understood the problem. So Gurudeva used to use the same example in talking about monks giving advice to family people. He would say, you're only resolving your own karma. You think you're helping someone else, but you're resolving your own karma. You're helping them through something that you went through once. So if you can do that successfully, you've really mastered that karma. So it broadens the principle that not only parents to children, teachers to students, elders to younger people, swamis to lay people, it's a very broad principle that through giving advice to others in areas in which we've encountered difficulties, we've experienced karmas, we're resolving our own karma and getting rid of it completely. That's our first story. Our second story has to do with drug-free Kauai. So, a number of years ago, there was a strong movement on the island to promote a drug-free Kauai. There was a coalition for a drug-free Kauai, and Gurudeva was asked to help. And so he delegated the project to Arumugaswamy, who under Gurudeva's direction produced a CD on drug-free Kauai. So it's very interesting the approach that Gurudeva took. You know, one approach would be you take, you know, the high moral ground. You know, drugs are wrong. Drugs are sinful, therefore you shouldn't use drugs, right? That's taking the high moral ground, kind of preaching right and wrong to people. Gurudeva didn't take that approach. He said, what we want to do is show the consequences. We're not trying to talk children out of taking drugs. We're trying to show them the consequences of their actions. This is what happens if you take certain kinds of drugs. So that before they decided to take the drugs, they would have a good understanding of the consequences of doing so. So how did Gurudeva go about having Arumugaswamy show them the consequences? Mainly with personal interviews of people who had ended up in jail because of taking drugs. Kauaians. So he interviewed two or three men, two or three women, got their stories on this CD, which is a very compelling statement about the consequences. Because the consequences in all cases were disastrous. You know, their whole life changed. Their whole life fell apart. It really went downhill. If they had a good job, they lost their job. If they had a good reputation, they lost their reputation. Some of them ended up stealing money and being caught at stealing. Whereas before, they were very upright people. In all cases, the marriages fell apart, totally fell apart, ended up in divorce, people lost nice homes, and the children ended up in a very difficult situation. So it was very compelling testimony from these drug users as to the consequences. Then there was one other person on the tape who was the warden, and his comment was that certain kinds of drugs, the methamphetamine kinds of drugs, turn people into walking zombies. They just walk around and their brains don't work right anymore. Their brains have been physically damaged because of excessive use. And they just can't think or function in a normal way. I mean, what a compelling consequence to think about. So, of course, that fits quite nicely into the fourth principle we were talking about, consider the consequences. So it relates to our own actions as mature adults. You know, we can reflect, what is the consequence of this action? What are the karmic consequences in particular of this action? And it also shows a good way of training children. Don't want to simply blame children for doing things wrong, scold them, punish them. We want to teach them to think about the consequences. Maybe we never told them the consequences, but we assume they understand the consequences. Usually that's the case. If a child does something wrong that we don't expect, usually we forgot to explain something, but we don't want to admit that. So the idea is, in raising children, try always to show them the consequences of their actions in a non-emotional, non-threatening way. So they begin to think that way. And when they're adults, they naturally think that way first. What are the consequences of this action? Do I want to experience those consequences or not? So we have our last two new concepts regarding karma. First one is creating the future. So normally when we think about karma, we think about the past. Karma. That's my past coming into the present. That's usually all we think about. But more important than that is to think about karma. That's how my present is creating my future. We have more control over that. All of us here today have enough wisdom to control our present. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We'd be out doing something else. This wouldn't be enjoyable. But all of us here today are concerned about that and have that ability to understand the principles clearly, how what I'm doing in the present is creating my future. So we can live in such a way in the present to create the kind of future we want. We want the world to be generous to us. In the future, we need to be generous to others in the present. Very simple principles. But a very important part of the concept of karma, to think about the future. The second new concept has to do with resolving karma and the ultimate future. What is the ultimate future? Moksha, liberation. So we're not just thinking about future, but the ultimate future, the goal toward which we're all striving, is to be liberated from rebirth on earth. Eventually, we'll get tired of doing the same old things. We want to move on. So the novelty wears off. So Gurudeva defines moksha in a beautiful way. It's a twofold definition. There's two different concepts in this definition of moksha. Moksha occurs after karma has been resolved and realization of the self, Parashiva, has been attained. So twofold. Resolving karma. There's nothing more to do on earth. We've run out of things to do. There's nothing holding us here. And we've realized the absolute, Parashiva. So for anyone serious about moksha, what does that mean? Well, we want to be careful about karma. We don't want to create any new karma. We want to resolve the karma we have. We're very karma conscious in our actions. We want to lessen the karma we now have, accelerate it, move it forward, mitigate it without adding to it. And that is part of our moving toward moksha. Moving on to our principles for effective karma management, we'll start quick review. We've got 7 principles so far, and we've got the last 3 coming up this morning. So as we were talking about yesterday, the first group of principles, the first 3 principles, has to do with controlling how we respond to what happens to us. That's the first challenge. Other people are doing things to us. We're not initiating them. Things are happening to us, and how we respond to those activities is the first challenge. So, as we know, we need to forego retaliation. We can't fight back. We can't go eye for an eye. He hit me, I'm going to hit him. We have to refrain that one. We have to accept responsibility. Whatever happens, even though it came through somebody else, I created it, because nothing can happen to me that I did not create. And we accept responsibility, which takes the focus off of the person who did it to us and puts it on us. But even then, we have to forgive the offender, because we still might harbor some resentment. We still might be angry. This person did it to me. I know that I really did it to myself, but I still am upset with this person. Somebody else should have done it to me. Not that person. that person didn't have the right to do it to me. It should have been somebody much more important than I am, you know. Whatever. We're not really letting go. We're still holding on because we haven't forgiven them. So like it said in the story at the beginning, the 10-year-olds, you know, have to forgive. In order to resolve something, you have to forgive it. Forgive the offender. And then you really start over, and you're not harboring the anger. So that's that group. The second group has to do with actions we're initiating. We're the one who is doing something to the world, to someone else. So the first principle was consider the consequences, meaning the karmic consequences. Are we going to be happy with the karma that this brings back to us? The second principle was to create no negative karmas. When we're serious about karma management, that's our goal. We don't want to create any new negative karmas. Why add to our burden of negative karmas through actions in the present? There's no point to doing that at all. That's our second group. Third group has to do with positively influencing the karma we bring into this life. So this starts to get more subtle. As we talked about, the first principle is divinely influencing karma, bringing the grace of the deity into our karma. We can be helped. We don't have to face this all by ourselves. And we talked about doing that through developing a personal relationship with Lord Ganesha, which has two benefits. Helps us find our swadharma, our position in life, which allows us to move forward the maximum we can in our spiritual growth. We don't stand still. We don't move backwards. We're able to move forward as much as we're able to in this life if we slip into our swadharma, our natural occupation, our natural situation, our natural duties, so forth in life. The second one is Ganesha, as the Lord of Obstacles, keeps us from doing certain things and helps us be successful in other areas, just like the mother and the 2-year-old. The mother's constantly putting obstacles in place to prevent the child from hurting itself and then removing obstacles to allow the child to be successful. So Ganesha is just like that with us as adults, Lord of Obstacles. The other principle we talked about for handling the karma of the past was called mitigate past karma. And reviewing that one quickly, came up with 6 different ways of mitigating past karma, reducing the impact of our past negative karmas upon us. So the first one was dharma, simply living virtuously. Second one was karma yoga, doing good deeds, helping other people, being generous. Third one was bhakti yoga, developing intensity of worship, which allows us to receive blessings from the deity. Fourth one was yatra, pilgrimage, particularly one in which we would call it a serious pilgrimage because we're not only involved in the pilgrimage when we start, but we're involved in the pilgrimage in preparing for it. A week, 2 weeks, even a month before the pilgrimage, we're doing certain disciplines as part of the pilgrimage. Some of you may have read the articles in the last issue of Hinduism Today on the pilgrimage, the Ayyappan pilgrimage to Sabarimala. Remember reading that? So to go on the pilgrimage, you have to start the disciplines 30 days before the pilgrimage. You can't just walk up and say, here I am. No, you have to start 30 whole days with very strict disciplines in order to participate in the pilgrimage. So that kind of pilgrimage is how Gurudeva envisions Sanmarga, our pilgrimage site here, how it will naturally develop. You know, we're not going to force it. It'll have its own timing, its own way of developing. But Gurudeva saw it as a site for serious pilgrimage, meaning the same kind of pilgrimage to Sabarimala, where people prepare themselves weeks, even a month before coming, following certain disciplines. So we're looking forward to developing that kind of pilgrimage opportunity here in the future to fulfill Gurudeva's vision. Fifth way of mitigating past karma was vows. We talked about taking vows, like during Skanda Shashti or Vinayaka Vratam for 6 or 21 days, for a fixed period of time. Usually you fast during the day and go to the temple once during the day to worship and then eat at night for that period of time. So at different festivals, vratas are taken to different deities. So that's an effective way of lessening our past karma. And the last one was prayaschitta penance, such as fasting. Fasting on pradosha is a kind of penance, pradosha day. Or walking prostrations. It doesn't have to be around Mount Kailas. It can just be a shorter distance. Around the temple is good enough. But it's a very common kind of penance is to walk, to move forward by prostrating, walking prostration. So you take one step, you prostrate, you stand up. You take one step, you prostrate, you stand up, like that. So that's a quick review